Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Meriwether and Tharp, your source for Georgia divorce. Find them online at theatlantadivorceteam.com.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
All right, coming up in just a few minutes, I'm going to introduce a word to the college football discussion today that we probably haven't heard before. We won't necessarily hear a ton around Georgia, but we will hear a lot of this around the rest of college football. We'll do that coming up in just a few minutes. Let me begin this way. You know, there is a conversation that happens here on a show like this one, and really everywhere around where Georgia fans get together, that most of college football just does not participate in. And I think you're kind of aware of this, but because we're also immersed in what's happening at UGA, it can be easy to forget how true this is. That Georgia begins the year as a legitimate national championship contender and has started the last several years that way, and for the foreseeable future, we'll start the year as a national championship contender. And yes, I know the simps that cheer for some of these other SEC teams love to mock Georgia for the fact that it hasn't won a national championship, but you get the point. You know, Georgia's kind of in that discussion. It can be easy to forget just how far removed most of college football is from being able to talk about that. You know, there are huge swaths, even within the SEC. You know, the majority of the programs in the SEC can't even view winning a national championship as a legitimate possibility, not just in this given year, but just even the foreseeable future. They're just so far away from that. Obviously, most of the Power Five is kind of in that same discussion. And in fact, this is so true that if you really pay attention to kind of like college football social media and things like that, there's actually a pretty big push amongst a lot of folks to stop talking so much about the national championship. There's this belief that talking so much about the national championship devalues some of the other things that are great about the sport, the rivalry games and the traditions and some of those other things. And frankly, it is stuff like that that attracts me to college football. I kind of understand where these people are coming from. You know, those that say, why should we act like our program doesn't matter simply because we don't play for a national championship when only one team out of 130 can win the championship and only like five or six teams out of 130 even compete for the championship. I sort of understand where they're coming from on that. And obviously, I appreciate things about this sport other than winning a national championship. Yet, in Georgia's case, that is clearly a reasonable expectation. And Georgia starts the year having to deal with that. And that expectation, while it gives you kind of a privileged position within the sport, it also gives you a lot of pressure, right? Because when you don't win the national championship, people notice, as you may have seen from your own social media feed, kind of all the way around. It is with all of that said that I want to bring in something that Kirby Smart said this week, which I thought was really interesting. And he probably faces some version of this question before each and every year. You know, the notion that the championship expectations exist for Georgia, you may say they are ratcheted up just a little bit this year, more so than maybe last year, year before that, things along those lines, because it does seem like Georgia's more settled at quarterback. Georgia has added another elite recruiting class to go along with a string of those as of late. So Georgia always deals with these championship expectations. Maybe you have even more of those for this upcoming season. And so Kirby was asked some form of this question. So Kirby, given all the pressure to win and the national championship or bust mentality, I'm paraphrasing the question, but the national championship or bust mentality that kind of floats around there, what do you do about all of that? I thought Kirby Smart gave a pretty interesting answer. This is what Kirby had to say.
You have to be careful that you make things just about that. I realize the standard of excellence that's been created here and the expectation. We never shy away from those expectations, but that's not going to get the end goal. You know, the goal is to have a net sum gain of positive, and you're trying to constantly move people from like over here to that might be on the negative side to the positive side, and then positive side, bring more guys along. And as you do that, the end goal is that you get more results, you know, that you're able to win championships. And we never shy away from that being our goal, but it's not something we have to talk about every day. Why would you talk about that every day? Because you're focusing on the wrong thing. If that's the case, you need to focus on how you're going to do that. How do we get that net sum to positive over negative? And that's by pulling everybody in the right direction. You know, that's our goal.
So we talked yesterday a lot about like how you have the proper mindset that leads towards winning. What Smart is describing there, I do think is absolutely kind of the, you know, sort of proper mindset for all of this. People mock Nick Saban for all the years in which he's talked about the process, and people even mock the other programs that have kind of attempted to copy, you know, that Nick Saban Alabama-like process. But I think there's a lot of misunderstanding of what that even really means. It's simply about process-oriented thinking as opposed to results-oriented thinking, and anything in life you're trying to achieve, that's obviously the kind of the right way to go about that, or at least anybody who's ever studied that would probably tell you that. And so Smart kind of gives you a little bit of a taste of that right there, which I think is totally true. But there's actually something else that Smart says there that I think is even more interesting than that. And for as much as I said a moment ago that I understand why there's huge swaths of college football that are probably looking to talk less about even the idea of a national championship because it devalues the accomplishments that most programs can reasonably aspire to obtain, I do kind of get all of that. However, for a program like Georgia, and for any of the programs that are truly in that national championship conversation, I find it personally fascinating, and I don't know if you do as well, but I find it personally fascinating the way in which you go about getting that done. The way in which that you actually build a championship winner. And obviously, the unspoken part of all of this is, it is just really hard to do because you have to have so much working for your advantage. So, you know, Kirby used it before, the net sum, all the different component parts that add together that equal a championship. You heard him use that phrase there a couple of times. The net sum of all of this, getting enough of those pieces to add together to equal national championship, is just really, really difficult to do. And if you don't believe me about how hard it is, take Alabama as a for instance. When Alabama's the reigning national champion the way they are right now, it can be easy to think, and you see a lot of this within, you know, regular college football fans or media, whatever else, it's almost like people can't imagine a time that Alabama wasn't on top because they were undefeated this year and they, you know, frankly are so good and have won so much. People have a tendency to think, well, they've just never lost a game. But keep this in mind. Nothing to me emphasizes just how hard it is to win a national championship than this. Alabama's the reigning national champion right now. Nick Saban's arguably the greatest coach, certainly in the modern era, if not of all time. But Alabama's only won the SEC West twice in the last 4 years, okay? You know, this notion that even Alabama's got all this figured out, no, it's still really, really hard to go out there and field a winner. To do it consistently year over year is incredibly hard because you've got to have so many component parts adding up to what Kirby Smart described as a net sum to kind of go out there and get this done. Now, my reason for saying all of that is this. There is some good news around Georgia here right now that for the pieces necessary to put a championship team together, you certainly get the impression that Georgia's got at least one of those pieces, probably far more, but I want to focus on one of those here for a moment. Georgia's got one of those pieces really, really figured out. The more you kind of sift through everything that's out there, the more you kind of pay attention to the discussion that's ongoing, both about the upcoming college football season and the upcoming NFL draft, I think you are left to really come to grips with the fact that Georgia is very lucky to have nose tackle Jordan Davis returning back to this team for 2021. Many of you mentioned this to me on social media from time to time. Davis is already an incredibly popular player. Obviously, we've done our part to kind of hype him because of how good that I believe he is. But you really kind of dig more deeply into this and you realize that Davis has a big, big opportunity to be one of those component pieces they can add towards a championship. And as Smart said before, the net sum necessary to get this done, Davis is kind of an example of what you got to have if you want to put a championship team together. Let me give you a piece of evidence that maybe backs up this point. I told you in yesterday's show about Matt Hayes from Saturday Down South writing the scathing piece about Dan Mullen. In that same piece, which is kind of like a little bit of a notebook type item thing, Hayes also got a quote from an NFL draft scout about Jordan Davis, a player this draft scout really likes. And in the praise that the scout kind of delivered regarding Davis, I think you get a sense for what could truly be in store for him for this upcoming year. Let me read a couple of sentences to you. This one, once again, Saturday Down South, Matt Hayes, the writer, quoting an anonymous NFL draft scout. Here's what he says about Davis. I thought he should have come out for the 2021 draft. And I'm big on guys returning. If there's any question about development. Obviously, the takeaway there is this scout thinks there's no question about Jordan Davis' development, but he goes on to say he was in a unique situation that he could have moved into the first round because of a lack of depth at that coveted position he means for this year. But by returning to school, he's got a chance to move into the upper half of the first round with a big senior season. So you just heard me say, that's, by the way, an anonymous draft scout via Saturday Night South, Matt Hayes, the writer. So you just heard me say, it is really hard to win a national championship because of all the pieces that you have to get that done. We've talked about explosive offense. We've talked about sacking quarterbacks. We've talked about all those pieces. But would you join me in saying that for as hard as it's going to be for Georgia, if this draft scout turns out to be right about Jordan Davis, and there's a very good chance that he will be, can we all agree that upper half of the first round nose tackle working for the Georgia defense is a pretty good piece to add the rest of this to maybe get this done to the tune of a national championship? I saw where Pro Football Focus the other day said that Georgia had given up the fewest rushing touchdowns of any team in the country since 2019. I think it's just 10 rushing touchdowns over the course of the last three seasons. Pretty impressive all the way around. And obviously Davis is a big part of that. Now, he's only one part, and there's a lot more you got to add to that. But when you've got draft scouts saying this about this guy, that maybe he could have been a first-round pick if he came out this year, but he has a great chance of being a top half of the first-round guy for the next year's draft, that's a senior season that Georgia gets the chance to take advantage of here this year. Doesn't make it any easier to win a national championship, but a big step towards that is having an anchor in the middle of your defense who's earning that kind of draft praise before senior season's even started. Boy, I can't wait to see what Jordan Davis is able to do in 2021. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by our friends at Meriwether and Tharp. So good to have you with us. All the video platforms, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, of course, our podcast platforms as well, radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. And, you know, for our video audience, one of the things we've been talking about the last few days is, and so many of you have been so kind to do this, we're asking you on the Facebook side of things to just simply share the show with your friends there. You know, allow this show to show up in their feed. Obviously, Facebook has kind of reconfigured some of the things. Many of you have been frustrated with your own user experience related to Facebook. And obviously, we want to try to help folks find this, get this done. So you can do that for yourself by sharing that on Facebook. And for those of you who've been frustrated because you haven't been getting the notifications that Facebook, you know, for years has kind of sent, YouTube is still really, really consistent about that. So my advice to you is, it's a great video experience, I think, anyway. I want you to watch the show where you're comfortable, but a lot of folks seem to like the YouTube video experience. When you subscribe to Dog Nation on YouTube, set those notifications for when we go live, you'll get all that Dog Nation video content delivered right there to you. If you haven't, you know, taking that step to become a Dog Nation YouTube subscriber, that is the next step when it comes to all of this, getting all the content we're able to deliver. Now, we're really thankful the fact we can even do this show, and obviously a great friend of ours like Meriwether and Tharp makes that possible. You know, they're your source for Georgia Divorce. You can find them online at theatlantadivorceteam.com. And you know, here's the one thing I always say. Obviously, the divorce can be kind of a challenging process. I certainly understand that. But life is also really short. And if you find yourself in the midst of a relationship that's just not working, you already know this, you know, it's probably time to go ahead and take that next step and really, you know, get to work on rebuilding your relationship, maybe your finances, everything kind of goes along with that. You know, if it's an untenable situation, why delay? You know, go ahead and take the step to reach out to my friends at Meriwether and Tharp, your source for Georgia Divorce. You can find them online at theatlantadivorceteam.com. I am proud to recommend them because I know the care they take with the people who they serve. I mean, I have talked to people in my own, you know, social circle who have, you know, used Meriwether and Tharp and allowed Meriwether and Tharp to be their representative and their advocate. And the praise that I hear back is the kind of thing that makes me feel good about telling you about them here on this show as well. So please check them out today. Your source for Georgia Divorce. You've got questions about the divorce process. I can promise you this. They have the answers. So please find them online at theatlantadivorceteam.com. All right. We're going to get Terrence Edwards here coming up in just a moment. Before that, though, brief version of Around the Doghouse here. And there's a word around college football that you're going to hear a lot over the course of this year. It's the idea of the players who have that extra year of eligibility. They were seniors a year ago, but they're also coming back for 2021. What do you do with those guys? Well, apparently the name we've attached to this, by we, I mean those of us in the college football community, we're calling them super seniors, not seniors, but guys coming back who've, you know, already played for 4 years. We have this version of like super seniors out there right now. And in some of the high-profile places in college football, you're going to see a little bit of this. The walking targeting call at Clemson, James Skoski, he's a super senior coming back for this upcoming year. LSU's got super seniors on both its offensive and defensive line. It's one of the reasons why I think LSU's a little bit of a bounce-back team here for the 2021 season because of the experience depth they bring back with super seniors on both lines of scrimmage. Maybe the most high-profile example of this is Derek King, the quarterback coming back to Miami. He's a super senior, I guess. You may remember Nick Starkel, who I think has played for about half the teams in the SEC West, had a great year last year for San Jose State, a team that kind of flew under the radar because they were traveling around all over the place, obviously with the California restrictions, but a very good team. Starkel had a very good year. He's coming back. He's a super senior for this upcoming year. So in some places around college football, the idea of a super senior is going to be a little bit of a thing this year. And one of Georgia's super seniors is actually wide receiver Demetrius Robertson, who, if I'm counting correctly here, class of 2016, he's actually moving into his sixth year of college football. Some of that, you know, injury-related. And so he hasn't always been on the field for all of those, but he has been around, you know, the world of college football now for quite some time here. And I think his veteran presence has a chance to matter for Georgia. Now, many of you are aware, I've also predicted D-Rob as my breakout player for Georgia 3 years in a row, I think. So, you know, I've definitely, you know, kind of, you know, predicted, you know, good things for him in the past. I'm probably not going to quite hype this up as kind of like breakout season type of thing, but glad that he's on the roster, glad that Georgia has him. A player that has this much experience in college football to kind of help out the rest of this wide receiver room, I don't think is a bad thing. And certainly when Georgia wide receivers coach Cortez Hankton met with the media this week, the topic of D-Rob did come up, and it sounds like Hankton's kind of reading from the same book that I might be reading from when it comes to D-Rob. Let me let you hear Cortez on this.
I think D-Rob brings a veteran presence to our room. He's a guy who has versatility because he can play multiple positions. He also embraces his role on special teams. So from that standpoint, you know, we talk about some of the things about being selfless. You know, he displays that every single day, you know, with his actions. And so when you have a guy who's willing to come back and, you know, and really embrace his role on his team and he's going to continue to compete, you know, you got to be excited about it.
So the word that you heard Hankton use there is selfless, which I think is really interesting. And we're going to actually hear a lot from Cortez on the shows coming up over the course of the next few days, because he had a lot to say about, you know, Arian Smith and George Pickens and guys like that. And a word he kept coming back to was willingness to be selfless, willingness to kind of contribute to the team. And the one thing I think you see is we've talked about receivers in the show, the way that national champions seem to have that like 1,000-yard guy, but that second receiver is also having a big year too. I really believe that receiver's a chemistry position, that one guy plays off another, especially when those guys have differing styles, strong, athletic, speedy, you know, all the ways in which you kind of think of wide receivers. And so this is why I think D-Rob's presence matters for Georgia, even if he's not necessarily my prime candidate to be one of those 1,000-yard type receivers this year, a guy that knows how to run the routes, a guy who's been here, worked with Todd Monken a year ago. That's a guy that can contribute to the overall chemistry in the wide receiver room that can actually raise the tide for all of the ships kind of swimming on this water for Georgia when it comes to wide receiver situation here this year. So super senior is going to be a word around college football this season. And in the case of Demetrius Robertson, that's one super senior Georgia may be glad to have. It's around the doghouse there. Before I bring on Terrence Edwards, let me also remind you about a great event going on right now with our friends at Marlow's Tavern. It's the Bayou and Bourbon event, obviously celebrating the great taste of Louisiana, the Big Easy there, New Orleans, Mardi Gras, all the things like that, the great food that comes from that great state. Of course, Marlow's Tavern knows all about that. Chef John Metz has kind of looked over it all and curated some very special menu items to really celebrate that. Delicious flavors. What a great time of year to be enjoying all kinds of stuff like that, whether it's the roasted chicken shrimp gumbo, the non-style po' boy, the deconstructed jambalaya, so much delicious stuff, including the honey bread bread pudding for dessert. By the way, our buddy, I think it was Silent Chaos on YouTube the other day, said that he had tried the honey bread bourbon pudding for dessert. He said, yeah, he highly recommends that. Of course, the bourbon cocktail is going to be great for all of that there as well. It is the Bayou and Bourbon event going on right now at Marlowe's Tavern. Go to marlowestavern.com. You can find out a whole lot more about that. Really appreciate all of you being with us here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by our friends at Merriweather and Tharp. Got a lot to do, more on the wide receiver situation for UGA. Let's get ready to do it with the guy who knows so much about it. He himself, a great former wide receiver, Georgia, Terrence Edwards, here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Merriweather and Tharp.
And across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Say hello to Terrence Edwards. Always great to get a chance to talk to the former Dog here. And, you know, Terrence, I was just speaking about Demetrius Robertson before you joined us. This is a guy that, you know, I've always liked. You know, I think the value of a player like this coming back for, in Robertson's case, a sixth year, I think that experience can matter. Listen, this is a crowded receiver room for Georgia. Admittedly, there are probably guys on the list I think are more likely to have big statistical years than, you know, maybe what Robertson brings to the table. But as Cortez Hankton said in the audio clip we heard a moment ago, that Robertson can really contribute a lot to Georgia because of how he's been around this program. I think that's a veteran presence that over the course of the season, UGA may end up being very glad that it has. Would you agree with that?
Well, I think so. It's a testament to Demetrius Robertson and his being able to mature as a man to come back for a sixth season, knowing that you might have some more talented guys on the roster, but he loves Georgia football, a former five-star, is willing to put his pride aside for the betterment of the Georgia program. And in that case, he doesn't have to get 1,000 yards, but he would be a damn good dog in my book once his time is up.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's exactly right. I mean, can you imagine for someone like this who's kind of gone through these drills with Cortez Hankton now for a few years, was in the Todd Monken offense for the full year last year, maybe processing some of that? Think about a guy like Arian Smith, who Hankton also talked about this week. I mean, don't you want guys like Arian Smith spending time around guys like Demetrius Robertson because, you know, Robertson can just kind of tell those stories from what it's been like to kind of be at the high level of college football, what he's done well, what he wishes he'd have done different, you know, things that he's learned. I think if you're a guy like Smith and you've got the blazing speed that gives you a chance to be a star, but maybe you just need to learn the ins and outs, what better way to learn that than stand next to a guy during drill work who's doing this for the sixth year?
Most definitely. You got a guy that has done it the right way, haven't complained. You haven't heard a peep out of him about he needs to get more touches. He needs to be in the starting lineup. He needs to be the star that we all thought that he would be. So when you have a guy like that in your room, Coach Hankton can sit back and allow Demetrius to speak to the younger guys about his experience and have kind of like a coach on the field. So the coach in the locker room when Coach Hankton's not around, you could go to a guy who you believe in, who a guy who's been there, done that, make the career may not have been what we thought it would be, but his experience and leadership is going to play dividends and be valuable to those young guys like an Arian Smith.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Another name that kind of comes up from Hankton this week is obviously George Pickens moving into his junior season. And, you know, Pickens missed some time last year because of injury. And, you know, people still kind of remember some of the stuff that lingered with him at the end of his freshman season there. And obviously everybody acknowledges that the junior season for George is huge because of how good he has a chance to be for UGA. And also because now that he's a couple years removed from high school, he just has a chance to kind of demonstrate just how much maturity and growth that he's shown while being in the Georgia program. What do you expect to see different from George here during his junior season that really gives him a chance over the course of what you hope is a 15-game schedule to really just show just everything that he really brings to the table as a receiver now for a full and complete entire season?
I just want to see what his leadership ability is going to be like. We all know that he's super talented. He's ultra skilled. I would like to see his route diversity expand a little bit. You know, once you get to the next level, just the NFL, we all think he's going to have a great career. You just can't run slants and goals, so you got to diversify his route running ability. But I would just love to see him take that next step as a mature athlete. We did see some of the things from his freshman year to his sophomore year decline some. Now we just want to see another step in his maturity level off the field and on the field. We all know what type of receiver he is. Now I just like to see a little growth in his maturity right now to take that next step to probably become the second receiver in Georgia history to have 1,000 yards, because he has the ability to do that.
So you mentioned the diversifying of the route running. Obviously, you're a trained eye. You're a coach yourself, and you did this as a, you know, both college and professional football player. For those of us that are not trained eyes, how will we know that he's doing that? Is there something that we can look for, whether it be on G-Day or, you know, certainly during the season, that gives us an idea that maybe Pickens is kind of expanding his repertoire there?
Yes, you see him run a catch more than slants and go routes.
Yeah.
So, you know, those things, he has to catch some out routes. He has to catch some digs, maybe some comeback. So once he's able to diversify his route running ability, man, the ball skills is there. That's undeniable. Now I just like to see him be more of a diverse route runner, be able to run all the routes and the route tree instead of just slants and goes.
One of the things we talked about on yesterday's show was the kind of competition that goes on during practice between the offense and the defense, and, you know, what Kirby Smart's saying about that right now, about where the defense may have been in comparison to first-year Todd Monken a year ago, where that group may be right now, given the fact that Georgia's replacing so much in the defensive secondary. As a guy who, you know, was a player at Georgia, obviously for a different coach, but still, you know, the same kind of thing, how much competition does go on during spring practice or during the scrimmages before the start of the year between an offense and a defense? And, you know, how much of that really is the kind of thing that drives you to kind of go out there, and even though they're your teammates, you'll be cheering for them on the fall Saturdays, you want to get the best of them during those practices. How much of the offense-defense type competition do you remember kind of fueling you as a player?
It's always. During the spring, you know, if that level of competition heightens, you're going against your teammates, and you want to have the upper hand in the spring. We all know that defense normally have the upper hand because it's just a little different. We got to get on the same page offensively with the offensive line, the quarterback's receiver. Defense, you just got to pursue the quarterback, running back, and cover your guys. So offensively, the receivers should be salivating. I mean, there's not a lot of experienced guys, but talented in the back end, but don't have a lot of experience. So we should see the receiving core have the upper hand with those guys. But what I do like about that the defensive backs are going to get an opportunity to play and scrimmage and practice against a deep receiving core, that's just going to elevate their play once fall comes around.
There are a couple other Georgia football things I want to squeeze in before we're done with you here today, but let me ask you this kind of away from Georgia football for a moment. I saw you tweet this, and I thought this was really interesting, but the idea of athletes playing multiple sports. We're talking about high school athletes right now, or maybe athletes even younger than that as they're getting ready for high school. Folks, are, I think, are kind of aware of your background, but for those who don't, you know, you coach high school, you coach individual players, you know, as they kind of, you know, work their way up the football ranks, and, you know, you were really encouraging folks on social media this week to play more than one sport. And Terrence, I totally understand where you're coming from on that, but for a lot of the folks who are listening to us right now, that's a very relevant conversation because, you know, their own sons or daughters are, you know, kind of in that sports world here. Let me push back on just one thing, though, and see how you respond to that. That when you look at, like, especially the Atlanta area right now, the competition just to be on high school rosters is just so intense. I mean, I've known people who, you know, are good-looking kids, you know, athletic build, have a hard time even making a varsity roster in one of these, you know, Atlanta area schools in any sport. They move up to the, you know, outside of the Southeast, they're playing football, baseball, and basketball because it's just easier to play high school sports in other places. That my point here is that, you know, you were a professional athlete. Your brother was a first-round pick. You know, if you're an elite athlete, obviously you can play a lot of sports and be good at all of them. But for people who maybe have more of my athletic genes, I mean, isn't there a case to be made that when you specialize, you give yourself a chance to learn a skill enough to make a varsity roster for one of these 4,000 student Metro Atlanta schools that otherwise is just really hard to do because of just how much athletic talent seems to exist in the state right now?
I could agree and to disagree because now you're pushing your body to the limits. You're only using one or two muscles. Your muscles are not being diversified okay. In other sports. So just like if you're trying to become a faster athlete, yes, you can go and find a trainer to give you that ability, but running track helps you. Playing basketball is explosive movements. It's the movements that you need laterally. It will help you on a football field and vice versa. So I was a guy that just played everything growing up, and I think it made me a better player. And there's a lot of players that played multiple sports coming up. I mean, you look at let's take Matthew Stafford for
sure.
His center was who? growing up at, back in Dallas.
The Dodgers pitcher,
Kershaw,
right?
Right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so now you got your the quarterback and the center play who played multiple sports in different sports are both multimillionaires playing the sports of their choice.
Sure.
So you don't have to limit yourself to one sport. Yes, we all know football is going to be my sport, but basketball is my first love. And if you know anybody knows me, they know I love basketball. I played football because I could. Basketball is all my first love, and both sports actually helped me out. Now, when you get coaches at a program that don't work together, that's where the problem comes in. Your football coach, your basketball coach really have to work together to let that athlete really excel in both sports. During the summers in my high school, my football coach, Coach Tumbling, would count my summer workouts when I'm at a basketball camp. He would count that towards my summer workout because you're actually doing something constructive for your body. So I'm a component of playing two sports. When you specialize, that's when a lot of the burnout comes, and those muscles get burned out, and you're not using the other muscles that you were given.
I think it's a really interesting point. I'm so thankful that you take your time to share your thoughts with all the young athletes who are obviously tuned in to hear from you, both on our show, social media, everything else. Before we let you go, Terrence, I want to squeeze in two things, and I apologize to our production staff. We don't have graphics ready to go on this. You mentioned you love in basketball. Another former Georgia player that loved basketball and really got discovered as a basketball player, Thomas Davis. The announcement comes out, he's going to get a one-day contract with the Carolina Panthers to kind of officially retire as a Panther. That's a guy you play with at Georgia. Terrence, what does 13 years in the NFL mean to you in terms of longevity? Obviously, a guy who played with, I mean, just the utmost class and was just an unbelievable player at Georgia. For the folks who are younger that didn't see him at Georgia, that you just got to realize this was a guy who was all over the place, really ahead of his time as kind of a hybrid defender. What does Thomas Davis mean to you, and how proud are you to see him get the honor that he deserves as he officially ends his NFL career here?
I'm very proud. I'm just going to leave it like this. For all the Georgia fans and everyone across the world who is enamored with stars, you would have never had Thomas Davis at Georgia's in this day and time because he was a no-star player that went on and played 13 years in the NFL. So stars doesn't matter, people. The guys that if the coach can see the talent, it may not be there at first. Thomas Davis, a red shirt. They found Thomas because he was so athletic on a basketball court. We will find a place for this guy. And he ended up being 13 years in the NFL. And I was very close to Thomas. And I'm very proud of the guy who's overcame adversity. Three ACL surgeries, I think it's two or three, and was still able to play 13 years in the NFL at a very productive and high level. And I can't be I'm so honored to be a former teammate of his and someone who's very close to him when we was at Georgia.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's inspiring, Terrence. Anytime you do something like that for, you know, that period of time, that longevity, I just think it's inspiring. You know, people pay attention to Tom Brady for how long he's played, and gosh knows, I understand why. But, you know, Thomas Davis is playing I don't know that Brady's ever even been touched in his entire NFL career other than the quarterback sneaks he was somewhat famous for. You know, but Davis is out there in the physical part of the game, and, you know, he's laying lumber. I mean, you talk about highlight reel from when he was at Georgia, big, big hitter, trading paint a bunch out there on that football field, did the same thing in the NFL. To last as long as he did, playing as physical as he did, it's just an inspiring thing. It's something I think that we should all aspire to go as hard every day as Thomas Davis did in the classy manner that he has as a football player. I'm glad to hear you say what you said.
Yes, he is, man. He's a great guy. He's deserved everything that God has given him right now. He's a great guy. He gives back to his small town down in South Georgia. He's just a great representation of what a damn good dog is.
All right, last thing for you, and listen, I know you're tired of talking about this, but, you know, people are curious. You tweeted this week that nobody knows what a Rick Gilbert's going to do. I said to our show on our show yesterday, I've probably given up on the idea that he's likely coming to Georgia. I am glad he's not going to Florida. I will be honest with you about that, Terrence, as you probably understand, as a Gator hater that I am. Anything to add to what you put out there on social media about kind of the, you know, currently unknown status of where Rick Gilbert goes next, former LSU tight end, now that he's not going to transfer to Florida?
No, I don't even know. I talked to him. He came to training about a week ago, and I just try to stay out of it. I don't try to persuade him to do anything that he don't want to do. This is a big decision for the young man again. He's already made one college choice, and he just really want to sit back, get some things in order in his life, and make a sound decision with his family that's going to be productive from him on and off the field. And once he comes to that decision, like he said, anyone won't know. He's just going to enroll in the school. And I just hope he finds what he's looking for. Whatever that is, I'm going to support him.
I think it's well said. Terrence, remind folks if they want some of that training that you offer. Obviously, you're pouring out your life into these young athletes. How can folks get in touch with you and be a part of that, getting better at running routes, catching the football, and all those things that we love to see folks doing?
Oh, you can find me on all social media at Terrence Edwards Wide Receiver Academy. And we are out at what I call the bubble on Mondays and Wednesdays from 5:37 with a lot of great quarterbacks, with the quarterback guru. He don't like to be called that, Tony Ballard. But we're there hour and a half, 45 minutes of straight individual, 45 minutes of straight routes on air, improving your game as a receiver.
I like it, Terrence. I appreciate you doing it. It's so much fun to talk football with you here on this show. We'll look forward to doing it again soon, okay?
Thanks.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
So there you have it. A guy that has talked to a Rick Gilbert within the last week, he said. And he says, I don't know where he's going to go right now. So mysterious circumstances surrounding this. And listen, y'all know I'm biased. I'm obviously, I've always liked Gilbert as a player. I'd love to have seen him in Georgia. But I do truly wish him well wherever he does go. And I hope he finds happiness where he does go. I'll always be sympathetic to these guys that, you know, it's such a big decision, and the rule, you got to have rules, right? You have no sport if you don't have rules. So the rules, though, in this particular case can be somewhat restrictive to guys. You make a decision, you don't like where you are, and it's kind of hard to undo that choice. It takes a little while to kind of find a new home sometimes. And so Gilbert is in that situation right now, and while I certainly appreciate the need for rules, I also am sympathetic to the guys who, kind of come underneath the weight of those rules as you try to find a new home. And so that's what Rick Gilbert is doing right now, the former LSU tight end and former five-star from Marietta. So we certainly wish him well with all of that. I also wish you well if you find yourself battling any kind of foundation or waterproofing issue. You know, I cannot recommend highly enough my friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia for that. They've got two full-time engineers on staff. These are folks who are proud partners of UGA. They do great work related to all of this. They will take really good care of you. They're also easy to get in touch with as well. Just dial 678-ESOG now. That's 678-ESOG now. You can tell them about your problem. If it's a simple fix, they'll just tell you, hey, just go to a hardware store and buy a blah, blah, blah. Just do whatever. But sometimes this kind of stuff is not quite so simple, and that's another reason why you want ESOG on the job, because, as I said before, two full-time engineers on staff. They've been around with us here for Dog Nation Daily for quite some time, proud partners of UGA as well, so they're fun to do business with, my friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Let me do a couple of SEC Through-related stories here just for a moment. Let me start with this. So CBSSports.com had a very interesting list of the quarterback competitions going on right now around college football. And there are a couple of SEC quarterback competitions that I think are really pretty interesting here. Some of you joke that I talk about Texas A&M too much. You know, this is an example of a quarterback competition that I think is going to be really interesting around the SEC here this year. When you look at the situation around Texas A&M, you've essentially got two guys battling out for this job. You got Hayes King, who's kind of, I guess, was the backup a year ago. And then you've got Zach Calzada, who some people remember as kind of briefly being on Georgia's radar as a potential recruit there at one point in time. And that looks to be the two guys kind of battling for that job. Now, here's what I would suggest. Between Calzada, the kind of traditional quarterback, and King, he's more than a running quarterback. King himself is actually kind of a track star in high school, things like that. So this is a pretty high-level athlete at that quarterback position. When I think about A&M as a potential threat to Alabama in the SEC West, to me, the high-end performance from Hayes King as that, athletic thrower, to me, it seems like the kind of thing more likely to threaten Alabama than Calzada, the more traditional drop-back passer. Not that you can't do that. Not that a drop-back passer couldn't give you great success there. Jimbo Fisher's obviously used that before. But in the case of A&M being as good as they can be, really as a threat to Alabama, I think that King is the name to watch for there. If he emerges as the A&M starting quarterback, all of a sudden I think you're thinking about a much, much higher threshold for potential achievement there for Texas A&M. That is a quarterback battle worth watching. Then there's the situation going on at Tennessee where you've got a couple high-profile former recruits. You know, maybe the name we can think about more prominently here is Harrison Bailey, the former quarterback from Harrison High School. But you've also got, is it Rendon Rooker? Is it the name of the guy who transferred in from Virginia Tech? To me, and listen, different people may disagree, but to me, this is an early test for Josh Heupel as the new coach at Tennessee. It's easy to understand why you might turn to Rooker as your starting quarterback. Transfer coming in, safe choice, keeps you from getting embarrassed. You feel pretty good that you at least are going to be solid at the position with a guy like Rooker who's got experience and everything else. But what did you recruit these other guys for if you're not going to play them? And as I said before, this to me is a test for Heupel. If he's confident in himself, if he's confident in what he's building there at Tennessee, if he believes that he's truly got a long-term plan, then I think that you look to another quarterback besides Rooker, the Virginia Tech transfer, to lead your program. I think that you're looking for something different there from that spot. I think that you're looking to a guy like Harrison Bailey, who, by the way, has been on Twitter, you know, recruiting, you know, Eric Gilbert and everything else. This is a guy who apparently still wants to be in Knoxville. That to me is the kind of guy you look at there. Now, for Georgia fans, they want Tennessee to lose. They don't care which quarterback they pick necessarily. But this, I think, will be kind of an interesting window what the Heupel era is going to be. Are you so worried about your first year there that you got to try to protect yourself with the veteran transfer quarterback? Or are you confident enough in your abilities to develop a quarterback, confident enough in your long-range vision for Tennessee that things will get better over time, that you really will trust yourself to develop one of these talented quarterbacks that's kind of waiting in the wings there? I think that's kind of a, you know, an issue that Tennessee probably ought to deal with a little bit there. I was going to do a thing on the 24/7 Sports had a really interesting list ranking the various facilities around college football. Let me hold off on that. I think I'm going to do that tomorrow because I'm running a little late here. I want to do a couple other things. Let me hold off on doing that. I'm going to do that tomorrow, but I think it's a really interesting list. I think Mike Griffith is going to write about this at adognation.com, and we'll talk about it on this show a little bit tomorrow. I have a little bit different take on that than Mike's probably going to have, so we'll do that coming up tomorrow, and for now, we'll make that your SEC through. In the time we have remaining, I want to go back to something from yesterday's show. I'm going to try to pull up a couple of tweets here and talk about these here for a moment because I think this is really interesting. So yesterday on the show, we talked about Kirby Smart when he met with reporters on Wednesday. There was a little bit of chatter about his offense and the defense, and there was a couple of pronouns that we noticed where when talking about the defensive mind of Kirby Smart called that group we. And when talking about the offense, Kirby Smart called that group them or they. We played the audio for yesterday. It happened a couple of times over the course of a couple of sentences, and I got a lot of feedback on that. Some of you thought that was pretty interesting. But I also got a couple of different people mention a very different take on why maybe Smart used the we for the defense and the they for the offense. I thought this was kind of interesting. Let me read you a couple of these. I think this is pretty good. First of all, Ronald Revels, on the subject of this, he said, B.A., you were one of the main people saying that Kirby needed to take his hands off of the offense and basically, you know, delegate that to someone who, you know, really knows what's going on over there, obviously Todd Monken. So Ronald Revels on Twitter says, you were the ones calling for Kirby Smart to delegate that. And Ronald says, to me, that's what Kirby's doing when he says the offense is they and them. That's him saying that I'm ceding control of this offense over to somebody else. I'm not meddling in the affairs over here. I'm not getting involved over here. This is Todd Monken's offense to do what he wants to do, which I thought was kind of interesting. Somebody else kind of said the same thing on that a little bit, if I can find the tweet here for a moment. Yeah, it was Buster on Twitter also saying the same thing. This is Buster saying, I thought we wanted Kirby to stop meddling with them. In other words, saying the defensive minded Smart stop meddling with them over there in the offensive room. He says, so maybe that subject object language is just a sign that Kirby Smart is letting Todd Monken do his thing. I got that, as I said, a couple of times from a couple of different people, and I think that's a pretty interesting perspective on all of this. And my reason for bringing up the topic yesterday and bringing up again here today is just simply the fact that it's just a really, I would think, very challenging thing to do to really make a hire like that, like Todd Monken, as many of you said on Twitter, to then trust him to do his thing. But you got to wonder, and this is the thing that I think is so fascinating, and obviously none of us can put ourselves between the ears of anybody else but ourselves. I mean, what if that offense goes out there and just paces the defense during spring practice? Is that a good feeling for the defensive mind of Kirby Smart? How many times do you think Nick Saban has dealt with that in recent years? I guarantee you, you know, while Saban has evolved with the times, we'll give him credit for that. My guess is internally, he's probably done some of that kicking and screaming. My guess is internally, he's probably seen some things happen in practice with Steve Sarkisian's offense this past season, maybe Brian Daboll before that, maybe Lane Kiffin before that. Seeing his defense get worked during practice probably wasn't a great thing to see. And if you're a Georgia fan, obviously you want a great defense to go along with the great offense, but we have clearly seen now over and over again the real deep connection between prolific offense and winning championships. If that actually does unfold at practice, the them and the they over there on offense, I wonder how comfortable that will be for a guy who's been as defensive-minded as Kirby Smart has been for as long as he has been. Really good feedback on yesterday's topic. I want to make sure I shared some of that on today's show. So we'll do the facilities talk tomorrow. My take on that is just a little bit different than some other people's are, and we'll kind of get into that then. I want to make sure we have time for our Gator Hater roll call, because I love nothing more than sharing all the great Gator Haters who are in our audience. In fact, let me give a quick shout out here today. I got a great message on social media, and really a beautiful picture. This comes from Aaron Nicole, who says, "Here's a Golden Shoe Gator Hater entry for you, Dog Nation Daily." She says, "My uncle passed away last year. This little guy sat in his window and now proudly sits in his son's. My cousin taught us all about being a dog so we could watch with him. Shout out to Marion Schuler, a dog for life." Aaron, I think that's just a beautiful sentiment. I really appreciate you sharing that. First of all, the picture itself of a really cool ceramic-looking dog with a gator in its mouth. I'm super jealous that I don't own that. But there's nothing that makes me prouder than all the folks in our audience, much like me, that can tell the stories of having all of this kind of passed down to us, and how blessed we all are to be able to be fans and the fun that comes along with that. Aaron, thanks for sharing that. Gator Hater Countdown. How about 240 days until the Dogs get a chance to beat the Gators once again? Can't wait for that big-time revenge game. We'll see you in October for that, and see you tomorrow. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp.